This is a Triple J podcast.
Every billionaire is a douchebag.
Parliament is a sick place.
I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic. Obviously, I'm an inadequate guest.
If no, that's not what I'm saying.
Who's the Prime Minister?
Have you ever thought about packing up your life, finding a job you can do remotely, and moving to Bali or somewhere in Mexico or Europe? Somewhere you can live a pretty idyllic lifestyle and find a work-life balance. More and more people are doing this, becoming digital nomads and loving it. But what is the impact to local communities and culture? I'm Angel Parsons with you for Hack Today, filling in for Dave Marchese. And today we're asking this question because a run club in Bali, organised by digital nomads, has gone viral, but for all the wrong reasons. They're being accused of favouring Westerners and excluding the locals. If you've thought about doing the digital nomad life, or maybe you're doing it right now, I'd love to hear from you. You can text in on 0439 757 555 at any point during the show. We'll be talking about the positives that this kind of tourism is bringing, but also the social tensions. Also, what it's like to experience psychosis. We'll be unpacking some new research looking at how smoking weed can increase chances of psychosis. But first,
Hack. Premier Jacinta Allen has sensationally resigned just minutes before her leadership was to be challenged in a vote on a spill motion.
On Triple J.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind 24 hours in Victoria. The state has a new premier. Just months away from the state election, Jacinta Allen stepped down from the top job this morning. Already, someone new has been sworn in as leader. His name is Ben Carroll. He was Jacinta Allen's deputy and the education minister, and he's already flagging some massive changes, including a royal commission. Our reporter Ariana Lacente has this story.
So Jacinta Allen has just resigned as Victorian Premier today. Have you been following that at all?
Yes, I saw on social media that she resigned.
No, not really. Wasn't really aware of it, to be honest.
I have been hearing that that's been in the works. I only recently moved to Melbourne, so I'm not super in touch with her and her policies. I've heard a lot of kind of distrust and dislike surrounding her.
This morning at a press conference, Jacinta Allen made a major announcement.
After speaking with my colleagues overnight, I've made the difficult decision to step aside as leader of the Victorian State Parliamentary Labor Party and as Premier of Victoria.
After nearly 3 years in the job, Jacinta Allen has resigned. She's been in politics since she was 25, which made her Victoria's youngest ever female MP.
Kind of like an iconic figure, right? Like historically in Parliament, and I guess there aren't very many women up there.
Allen took over from former Labor Premier Daniel Andrews in 2023.
I believe I would have won, but doing so this close to an election takes up valuable resources, including the most precious of one, time.
But her popularity has been fading in the lead up to Victoria's state election this November, following criticism around transport projects and alleged corruption in the construction union.
I didn't get everything right, but I will leave knowing I made a difference.
As Labor MPs in Victoria voted on a new leader this morning, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese paid tribute to the outgoing Premier.
Jacinta Allen is someone who I think is a very decent human being. She's someone who can be proud, I think, of her achievements.
While opposition leader Angus Taylor labelled Labor's track record in Victoria rotten.
This is a rotten Labor government in Victoria. It's a government that, as I said, has driven crippling debt, a broken economy, endemic crime, and we need to see a change.
Minister Carroll, I invite you to take the oath of office.
After a couple of hours of scrambling, which involved an interim leader and a factional deal, Jacinta Allen's deputy premier and the education minister was promoted to the top job.
I am honoured and humbled to be elected unanimously as the new leader of the Victorian Labor Party.
In a meeting with his party, Ben Carroll was unanimously elected to lead Labor as the Victorian premier, but not without a challenge from Attorney General and Planning Minister Sonia Kilkenny for the position. It's been a big day for the new Premier, who has already announced a royal commission into alleged corruption in the construction sector.
We are saying enough is enough. In my government, integrity will not be optional. Whether in business, politics, or the union movement, there will be zero tolerance for those that misuse their positions. I am not Daniel Andrews. I am not Jacinta Allen. I will do things differently because different times require a new approach.
He's promised to do things differently as he fights to keep Labor in power when the Victorian state election rolls around in November.
The stakes at this election are too high. Polling says Victoria is on track for Australia's first Liberal One Nation government.
He'll be up against Victoria's opposition leader, Jess Wilson.
He's been sitting next to her every single day when she's been making decisions, and decisions as a whole as a cabinet, not to hold a royal commission.
And with the rise of Pauline Hanson's One Nation party, this state election will be a bit of a temperature check on whether that popularity in the polls translates to votes. So how has all of this been received outside of Parliament House by the young people who will have a big say on the result in November?
I'm a First Nations individual. I think with the rise of the One Nation party, there's definitely a lot of doubt and worry.
I also just think more of an active effort to consult and listen to the voice of the youth.
Do you know who you vote for?
No idea. I'll have to see who sparks my interest.
Hack on Triple J.
Ariana Lechente reporting there, and on the text line, Rob from Bundjalung Country says, don't you just love when politicians say, I'm not going to resign, and then they resign? Yeah, politics moves quickly, doesn't it? And as we said, the election is coming up in November. We'll keep you across how that plays out. But now we are going to shift gears a little bit.
Hack.
I would consume it every day. Like, it was to the point where I didn't find it fun to function without it.
On Triple J.
How much do you know about the risks of smoking weed? Now, stick with me because we're about to talk about something that doesn't get talked about much, and that's psychosis. Because some new research has come out finding young people who use cannabis daily are up to 4 times more likely to develop psychosis than those who don't. It can be a terrifying experience. If it's happened to you, let me know, or if you feel your mental health has changed in some way because of cannabis use. I'd love to hear what your experience is. 0439757555. You can text in. Jason Katsaris has been looking into this.
Your entire reality becomes distorted.
5 years ago, Layla Palmer had her first experience with a diagnosed bout of psychosis.
To the external person, they go, oh, your reality's not real. This isn't actually happening.
She says she'd see and hear people who weren't there.
People aren't here, people aren't talking to you. But for me, it feels real. I can hear the voices and everything. So it becomes really distorted.
And she says the psychosis was accompanied with paranoia about people around her.
You get paranoid and you're like, these people aren't trying to look after me, they're trying to get to me, they're trying to hurt me and stuff like that.
Lay, who's now 26, says when she suffered from psychosis at 21, she'd been smoking weed every day for years.
It was to the point where I can't function without it.
The Wiradjuri woman, who now works at Headspace, was able to get help and recover after her psychosis, but she reckons weed contributed to the decline in her mental health.
In hindsight now, I know for me personally, with the disorders I have, cannabis did not help. It makes me more vulnerable, more likely to go into a psychosis.
That theory might ring true with a new study released last month by researchers at the University of Queensland, which found that young people who consume weed every day can quadruple their risk of developing psychosis. Professor Owen Kilacki from the youth mental health advocacy group Origin isn't surprised by the findings.
Between the onset of puberty and about your mid-20s, there's incredible brain development goes on. That's probably why young people are particularly vulnerable to things like cannabis.
He says it's still not clear why cannabis can be so destructive for some folks' mental health.
We know that there are specific receptors in the brain. The chemicals that are in cannabis specifically attached to those receptors are also involved in the sort of development of psychosis.
Simon Dodd is Headspace's national clinical advisor, and he says for some people, weed can unlock mental illness.
If psychosis is the tiger in the cage, cannabis can unlock the cage.
For those people who are vulnerable to psychosis, cannabis probably contributes to it. And the more the person uses and the more frequently and the stronger the cannabis is, it actually makes it more likely to contribute to psychosis.
Cannabis was legalised for medicinal use in Australia in 2016. Simon says that while the strength of medicinal or legally purchased weed is tightly controlled, that's not the case with stuff sold on the street.
There are psychoactive substances in cannabis. There's THC and CBD, and THC is the one that is actually the psychoactive substance that impacts negatively, particularly around psychosis. So the stuff that your grandparents were smoking in the 60s and 70s is not what is out there now. It's much more potent.
Daniel Croft is an advocate at the Victorian Youth Support and Advocacy Service. He says he noticed cannabis negatively affecting his mental health a few years ago.
So I started consuming cannabis when I was a teenager. You know, at the time there was no education, I had no idea what I was doing, and that led me to consuming cannabis in ways that didn't positively contribute to my mental health.
He reckons there needs to be more education around cannabis and how much is too much.
I think a lot of the time it focuses on the negatives so much rather than giving people informed insights into how these substances affect us.
Leigh ultimately decided to stop consuming cannabis after her psychosis.
There are so many resources and so many doctors out there that you can actually go to that specialise in this thing. So, like, don't think you're alone.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Jason Katsaris reporting there. And I do want to say, look, if any of this has resonated with you, if you need to talk to someone about mental health, Lifeline is there on 13 11 14. Hearing from people on the text line is really interesting. Someone saying, I consume every day and have since I was 15. I have no bad mental health diagnoses whatsoever. I guess it's not the same for everyone. Someone else, though, saying, I smoked weed all my early 20s, then stopped because it started to cause me psychotic issues. Some really interesting experiences coming through, and it is different for everyone. So we're going to dive into this a bit deeper now. Jani Leung is an associate professor at the National Centre for Youth Substance Use Research at the University of Queensland, and she's part of this research that we're talking about. She joins us now. Hi, Jani. Thanks so much for speaking with us on Hack.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
One of the major findings of your research is around the risk of psychosis in young people who use cannabis daily. Do you think that most young people are aware that psychosis is even a risk with cannabis use?
Yeah, so that's a good question. When we look at data, mostly available data is from overseas, for example, in America. People who believe that cannabis use is risky, that's less and less people are thinking that over time. So now more and more people are believing that cannabis use is not risky, but it doesn't match the products that are available in the market. Because compared to when our parents or when our grandparents were young, the cannabis products now that people can buy, often they could be 5 or 10 times more potent or stronger products than it would used to be. And stronger products carry greater risk. So that is a concern if many people, especially young people, are not knowing that cannabis use could have risk on mental health.
Is the risk of psychosis higher for younger people in particular?
So it doesn't mean that the risk is only for young people. So older age group can also have this risk, but young people are more vulnerable because this is a time when brain is still developing. And so drugs could have a stronger and more long-lasting impact that could affect the rest of their life.
Did you discover anything in your study about anxiety and depression and how cannabis might impact those kinds of mental health conditions?
There is certainly linked. And for cannabis, depression, anxiety is an interesting relationship because there are reports of people who might be using cannabis to help with their depression or help with their anxiety symptoms. But then there is no strong evidence that it helps. When we look at the highest level of evidence on whether cannabis use could help reduce those symptoms and if it's a long-lasting impact. Yet no strong evidence at all. In fact, there are people reporting that it could worsen their depression and anxiety symptoms, the cannabis use. So people could be using cannabis for medicinal reasons for these conditions. Some people say it might be helping. Some people would be reporting that it could have negative impacts. But we really want to use medical products that are effective, because when we're using a product that might not help, what it means is that that person could be missing out on other treatments that might could have helped. The problem is that a lot of the times for now, practice and policy could be moving faster than evidence.
When we talk about increased risk of conditions like psychosis, like what you were looking in your study, was your study looking at legal and illegal cannabis, or only one in particular?
We looked at mostly illegal, but it's also a little bit blurred nowadays because we have a study that asked people if they use cannabis for medicinal reasons, and also we asked people if they have a prescription for it. And this is using Australian national data. So this is national representative data that the government put out survey to thousands of people to answer. We found that the people who reported using it for medicinal reasons, most of them are using also for recreational reasons.
Young people are going to keep doing this. Do you think we need more awareness and education around, like, hey, this can happen, and if it does, here's what you should do?
Yeah, we definitely need more awareness. And yes, it's not a super common illness, psychosis, so it could be rare. So it could be that people might have seen their friends using cannabis and they're fine, so then it must be fine, right? But then even if it's a small case, it could happen to someone. And when it happens, it's a very serious mental disorder that have a very strong impact on someone's life. So even if it's a low risk, we should still be vigilant about it.
It's really great to break some of this stuff down that you've been looking at so closely. Some really interesting findings here. Associate Professor Jenny Leung from the University of Queensland, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I'm hearing from so many of you on the text line, someone saying, my dad developed schizophrenia in his early 30s after he smoked weed pretty much every day from about 16 years old. Weed must contribute to activating a schizophrenia gene as far as I'm concerned. That's someone's text there. Someone else saying, I've smoked weed every day for 13 years and it's never been bad for me. I actually have felt at times like my memory is better and I've never struggled with any kind of anxiety or paranoia. It's a miracle drug in my opinion. Someone else saying, my brother is 30 and has had 3 drug-induced psychotic episodes that have resulted in hospitalization as a result of cannabis. And Dr. Bridget in Brisbane says, psychiatrist here, I'm frequently in despair seeing the irresponsible use of high-potency cannabis through legal prescribers. The evidence shows that it can definitely trigger psychosis. A lot of interesting experiences and takes there. And I, again, just want to remind you, if you do need to talk to someone, Lifeline is there on 13 11 14. For now, we are going to cast our minds overseas and move on. Hack.
This viral run club in Bali has gone from social media sensation to the center of a national scandal.
On Triple J.
Working from a luxury villa overseas in the sun, living a constant working holiday, sounds pretty good, doesn't it? More and more people are choosing to become digital nomads to try to find a better work-life balance. But what kind of impact is this having on local communities? Well, those questions have really come to a head this week after a viral run club organised by digital nomads in Bali made global headlines, but for all the wrong reasons. Have you seen this? I would love to know what you make of it on 0439 757 555. If you're a digital nomad or want to be, I want to hear from you. Here's Alice Angeloni to bring us up to speed.
What's your nationality? What's your age? And like, are you a digital nomad or not?
This is Marina. She's in her 20s and lives in Bali and works online for a global company. She's from Java in Indonesia, and this is how she answered an application for a community organization called Entourage Bali. Entourage describes itself as a curated social community for digital nomads in Bali to help people who are new to the island connect. But Marina's application kept getting knocked back.
I got rejected for 2 times for no reason.
She wasn't clear on why, so she applied again.
I thought it's just an error system, so that's why I applied for 3 times.
Marina was accepted as a member on the 3rd attempt, which gave her access to events like dinners and parties. But when she tried to join their WhatsApp group chats, she faced the same issue.
I'm in the middle of nowhere. In a way, I'm also an official member, but at the same time, I wasn't included in the group chat, so it's a bit weird.
But in the past week, Marina realised she wasn't the only Indonesian local with that experience. Social media posts claiming discrimination by the Entourage organisation went viral. It prompted a strong reaction from Indonesian authorities, and they have now banned the 2 Dutch national organisers from re-entering Bali. Authorities say this club created a state within a state, that the Run Club event was illegal and alleged discrimination against locals.
I would say it is not fair to be discriminated in your own country.
Reynard's an Indonesian content creator who lives in Bali. His handle is Not Diplomat.
I'm not really surprised because I've been hearing similar stories about discrimination for quite some time here.
Reynard believes this scenario with Entourage marks the start of a much bigger conversation.
This specific incident, it became a catalyst that brought up many similar stories.
More broadly, it's got people discussing the privilege of Western digital nomads living in places like Bali.
Everyone on Instagram, especially in Canggu, has this one particular post that says that 6 months ago I was unemployed and then I moved to Bali and my life changes.
Sasha is from Indonesia and is a digital nomad and DJ living in Berlin. And she's seen Bali change a lot with the rise of influencers and people working online.
I'm like, your life didn't change. You just have a purchasing power from a Western country or European country and you just move there. Like, there is nothing really significant about what you're doing.
And Sasha highlights some of the double standards in how different nationalities can be treated.
In order to live in Germany, I have to go through like a really, really strict system where I have to prove my income, I have to prove my work permit, I have to prove my criminal background is cleared, I have to also learn German because I want to stay here long term.
In a statement posted late last week, Entourage Bali said that its run clubs were open for everyone, including non-digital nomads. It pointed to errors in the automated approval process for its chat groups, which incorrectly rejected some numbers registered in Indonesia. Entourage Bali said it was pausing all its events for now. It said it takes full accountability and promised to make, quote, real changes going forward.
I think something in Bali is definitely changing.
Young people I've spoken to in Indonesia hope this is a turning point.
We need to stop being people pleaser. We need to stop giving like special treatment. Just because you use dollar and we use rupiah doesn't mean like you're above everyone else. Like, our kindness is not weakness.
This is Hack on Triple J.
Ali Angeloni reporting there, and we're going to delve into this a bit more now. With us is Angtiasti Juwasidi, who's a researcher, author, and lecturer specialising in the social impacts of the digital economy. And she joins us now. Hi, Angti.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Why do you think this Bali Run Club story has caught so many people's attention?
Well, I guess for one, the kind of disparity, the kind of differences is already there since a long time ago. You know, people can notice, people can see the differences between locals and foreigners, that they have a different kind of lifestyle. They go to different cafes, they live in a luxurious rentals. So it really screams exclusivity. It really screams something like, you cannot sit with us kind of mentality, almost, because of something that has been observed and going on for quite a long time. I think that's probably why it becomes this big. It triggers something that is already there for quite a long time.
Do we know how much digital nomadism has been increasing in Bali?
There are different aspects of digital nomads that kind of differentiate them. For one, they're usually working digitally, but roughly based on my observation and certain articles and literature, probably around 30,000, 35,000. They kind of fluctuate over time.
We're hearing a lot about the concerns people have here, but do these digital nomads also have an impact in a positive way?
Yes, definitely. So they bring in quite a lot of economic impact. Every now and then, some digital nomads that are very much engaged with the local communities, they also have events where they teach the communities as a way to help the community grow. Sometimes they're also involved in environmental activities, for example. So there's a lot of the positive impact on digital nomads, and I do meet with quite a lot of them. A lot of them have a positive mindset or positive contribution to the local communities, or at least they're trying to.
What are some of the other impacts you're seeing, whether it's on culture or the landscape itself?
Yes, definitely. So that's the part where you notice digital nomads pretty quickly, usually because they socialize among other digital nomads. So in terms of the social impact, you notice that they lived in this social bubble almost, which kind of increased this risk of not being very sensitive towards the local culture. And then gentrification, that is also something that we notice quite a lot, especially in areas, in hubs where there are a lot of digital nomads. And following that, usually also these kinds of cafes, co-working places, co-living spaces, the rental increase. And so the locals cannot really afford to live there. They might work there, but they cannot really afford to live there. And that's, again, creating this kind of disparity in terms of between the locals and the digital nomads, how obvious it is. They're actually living in a different circle. They're living a different kind of lifestyle. Indonesian, and especially Indonesian government, I feel like they're under this conflicting position because, for one, they are under pressure of making more money and to bring in a lot more foreign visitors. But I think it's very useful for them to also take some time to nourish the local people, the local communities, the infrastructure, and making sure that the growth is balanced and well distributed to the local people that probably need them the most. But this is a global trend that is happening across the globe.
And so as it continues to happen, and people choose to, you know, try and chase this kind of lifestyle, we're hearing it on the text line from our audience that the intention is not to have a negative impact on locals or local culture. But, you know, as different parts around the world continue grappling with this social and cultural kind of tension, what do you think a solution is here going forward?
Yes, it is. So the trend is there, and I don't think anyone is really suggesting that say no to digital nomads at all. Well, the best solution that we can think of is that, first of all, we have to understand that they do bring money, they bring real human connection, they bring energy, you know, so they make the neighborhood more lively. But I think at the end of the day, the local, especially the local government, have to have this very firm regulations, but also on how they kind of approach to kind of signal that we would need you to respect the culture. We would need you to respect the locals, because a lot of these digital nomads, they feel like they no longer under the kind of social restriction from wherever they are coming from. And so they behave in a way that is not very good or constructive in terms of how they interact with the local communities.
It's such a complicated topic with lots of views on it as well. And we really appreciate you kind of giving us your insight and what some of your work has shown. Angtiasti Jiwasidi, thank you so much for joining us on HACK.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And lots of strong thoughts on this from you on the text line. Someone says, Bali influencer culture is the most insufferable, vulgar lifestyle. That's someone's opinion there. Someone saying, interesting how digital nomads are not referred to as immigrants, unlike people who come to Australia on working visas, calling out the disparity there. Someone else saying, I was in Bali a couple of weeks ago and it was unbelievable the amount of influencers. People really need to show some respect. That is all we have time for on HACK.